Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Today's podcast title is Auditor Angst, Disclosure Delays. I'm joined by Liz Farmer, a public finance expert, co-host of the Public Money Pod, and author of the Substack newsletter, Long Story Short. I'm also joined by my Muni's colleague, Kunal Kamal. We'll be discussing the growing auditor shortage and delays in government financial reporting. Liz, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Really happy to be here.
Hello, Paul. Thanks for having me again. And welcome, Liz.
So, Liz, this year you've published a series of stories on how it's taking longer for governments to finish their annual audited financial reports and what that means for transparency. So let's start establishing as a point of comparison. Corporate bond issuers have median audit times of 60 to 90 days as regulated by the SEC. In contrast, municipal bond issuers take 2 to 3 times longer to complete their audits. What's causing this significant disparity?
There's a number of things. The simplest explanation is that governments are made up of a lot of different, typically made up of a lot of different units like agencies, and there's just a lot of pieces to put together, and that takes longer. I was just pulling up some examples of things like airports or like very singular systems that are still government units, but something like airports, electric, a utility district, their audit times are much closer to the corporate sector. I'm looking at something like 60 days, 79 days. But when you start getting to the government level, there's just a lot more pieces. But the other aspect of it is that like government accounting is like its own little weird world. And there's a lot of differences between it and the corporate sector. There's layers, there's auditing standards to adhere to. The Governmental Accounting Standards Board, GASB, typically is adding new standards that add more work to these reports every couple of years. Those are just kind of the big picture differences.
So Liz, what are the potential consequences for local governments when financial reports are delayed? And can delayed audits affect a government's credit rating and its ability to issue debt?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And there is definitely a direct impact for taxpayers when audits take longer. First of all, big shout out to the University of Illinois Chicago and Merit Research Services. I've based a lot of my writing on the research that they've done. And for over a decade, they've been tracking audit times. When we talk about the average government audit, it has gone up by a magnitude of weeks. Back in 2009, the typical city or county or state would take around 6 months to produce the audit. And even back then, that's not ideal. Everyone has forever talked about how government auditing, government financial reports should be produced faster. But now the average has bumped up to about 6.5 months for cities, counties, and states. And that's really driven by like counties are taking way longer than they used to. And there's a lot of different things. I mean, you think about what's happened during that time. We've had Obamacare passed, and that has a big influence on Medicaid spending, which affects counties and states. So think about when a budget is passed, and usually it's in the spring, right? If your fiscal year starts July 1st, if you're lucky, you've got the annual financial report from the previous year, so you know what actually happened. But a lot of times, the annual financial report is still being written during budgeting season. And so that's important because lawmakers tend to go on whatever happened last. And if all they know is what they planned on doing the last fiscal year, but they don't necessarily know how that all worked out, which is what the annual financial report says, they're going by guesswork. They're making a best guess. And by they, I mean the budget officials are. And that's what they tell the lawmakers. But the ability to make smart and sound financial decisions that directly affect taxpayers relies on having those accurate numbers. So accountability is a big deal. The other big thing that affects taxpayers is credit rating. And this is something that I've seen change as of late. The last couple of years, credit rating agencies have really been pointing this out and dinging localities for having late financial reports. Last year, S&P withdrew 64 local government ratings for not, this was mid-2023. These governments still hadn't published their 2021 financial report. So it had been 2 years and they still don't have the numbers out. So they got their credit rating withdrawn. Moody's is doing the same thing. They withdrew 18 credit ratings last year, so far 24 this year. And both agencies are saying that they expect this to continue to be an issue, largely because of the audits taking longer in audits and financial reports. I'm kind of using those as the same thing.
So, Liz, what are some of the best practices you've seen by governments in financial reporting? And what policy changes or initiatives could help alleviate the pressures on financial reporting and auditing in the public sector?
So the best practices, you know, I've been talking about how everything's taking longer. This is not true, obviously, for all governments. Some governments take way long, others take a really relatively short amount of time. So one of those is Columbus, Ohio. They've set themselves a 90-day deadline to produce their annual financial report. I'll get into that in a minute. But Washington, D.C., which operates like a city, county, and state, this past year, it got its numbers out, its report published in 116 days. New York, the city of New York, not a small place, a lot of numbers. Their annual report was out in around the same amount of time, 118 days. It can be done in 4 months or less, even if you have a lot of component units and all of that stuff to deal with. Some of the ways that that can happen, GFOA, the Government Finance Officers Association, recommends things like recording your activity throughout the year. When new accounting standards pop up, typically you'll have a couple of years before you have to actually implement them. GFOA says start doing that early, like set the timeline for when you're going to do that. In terms of a local government, I've found Columbus, Ohio, what they do to be particularly helpful to talk about. I spoke with their auditor, Megan Kilgore, and she said Columbus has a long history of setting this 90-day deadline. It's something that they have prioritized and really, really pride themselves on. So that mindset is a big deal that has to happen. And so they started something called the Financial Reporting Program. I mean, and that's what all of this 90-day deadline stuff is built around. And the way she describes it, it's like they are a well-oiled financial reporting machine, and they are constantly reporting and auditing throughout the year. So instead of always be closing ABC, it's ABA, always be auditing. And they have a detailed project plan. They have the external auditors, which in their case is the state. In other cases, it's a private auditing company. They have the external auditors also commit to that 90-day deadline. And she told me, just like a runner, you know, practices for a marathon, you build up each week. You have these deadlines for having a first financial statement preparation, audit activities. You start building the ship way earlier. So you don't wait until the end of the year to start doing all this stuff. You're starting it and doing it as soon as you can. And yes, you will go back, and as the numbers become more clear, you'll have to make tweaks, but it's still much faster than doing it all at the end of the year.
So Liz, how do governments balance this need for comprehensive financial reporting with the practical challenges of short staffing and technical complexities?
I feel like that's kind of the holy grail for financial departments right now. It's not just auditing and government finance departments that are struggling with staffing. It's across a lot of government. Things have gotten better in the last year in terms of government staffing. But when you look at things like retirements, those are still happening, and those are going to continue to happen. And with that, you have brain drains. So it is a real challenge to be able to balance, you know, your day-to-day job with producing this report, because there's obviously a lot more, right, that government finance departments do. They're not just around to write this report and then go home. Financial communication is increasingly part of what it means to be a government finance officer. Talking to elected officials, talking to the public. One of the big discussions that is going on right now is, as you add these accounting standards and new requirements to these annual financial reports, are you getting out of it what's intended? Or is it coming at the cost of now it's taking even longer to produce this report, which leads to less accountability and transparency? I mean, there's no good answer right now. I'm a member of the GFOA's, or I'm on the advisory committee for GFOA's Rethinking Financial Reporting Initiative. A lot of what I've just talked about is kind of what we're discussing. Nobody wants to like blow up all the accounting standard. Well, most people, I should say, don't want to blow up all the accounting standards and start from scratch. But there definitely is this a lot of discussion around what's appropriate, how much is too much, what are we really trying to get out of the annual financial reports that's useful information? And do we need all of what's in there, at least on an annual financial report? Is there some other way we can get that information without attaching it to the annual numbers? There's a lot of more questions now than answers, unfortunately.
So Liz, a follow-up there. With the pandemic, what kind of challenges does that create, if it does, for governments in reporting in terms of when they get federal aid? Is there more accounting or work that they need to do for the federal government that now is going to exacerbate this, or is it manageable? How does that work?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about that, because that's one of those things that has, it's temporary, but it has also made the annual report situation worse. So the pandemic doled out billions of dollars in aid, and in a historic way, local government entities that had never received funding directly from the federal government, or rarely do, got $1 million, got a couple million dollars, got way more money than they, I don't want to say that they knew what to do with, but more money probably than they ever had in one batch from the federal government. And what all that means is that the federal government has its own reporting requirements as well. And so what that did is it added more accounting and reporting work onto government finance officers that were already kind of tapped. And so it just created more work. And while obviously accounting and reporting this stuff is a good thing, it was the fact that a lot of governments that had never been subject to something that's called the single audit, which is what you have to submit to the government if you spend more than, it used to be $750,000 in federal funds in 1 year, now it's $1 million. So a lot of small governments were having to do this for the first time or the first time in a very long time. And what do? You reach out to an external auditor to do that because there's no one in your town who can do that. And by the way, there are a lot fewer auditors now with this kind of expertise than there was a decade or so ago. And so all of this just kind of added on, gummed up the works even more in that sense with the federal funds. I mean, not to look a gift horse in the mouth, but right. But it was a great thing on one hand, but on the other hand, it really kind of introduced some management issues that governments are still dealing with. On the positive side, I guess, in that respect, the funding isn't forever. And so at the end of 2026, if you haven't spent it, it goes away. And so there is a deadline for that, at least.
So given all the work you've done on this subject, how do you foresee the trends in audit times and auditor availability evolving in the coming years?
Yeah, honestly, not to be like a doomsday of the voice of doom, but I do see it getting worse before it gets better. At 2026, like I said, with the federal funds, at least that responsibility of reporting them does have a deadline, but I mean, it's still a few more years of that at least. And then meanwhile, retirements are still going to be happening. So you're still going to have this brain drain and difficulty to find a good replacement for those people leaving. I was talking with someone from a city in California who said that, and this is, I think her office is something like 20 staff members in the finance office. It's not a small city. And she said that around 3/4 of her staff will be eligible for retirement in the next few years. Hopefully not everybody retires at once, right? But just having that hanging over her, and she's not the only one. It's a scary number, but it's that kind of what's coming up is what I hear a lot from people in public finance. It's the retirements. And so that's going to continue to be an issue. Maybe it wouldn't be as much of an issue if you had people lining up to join their local government's finance office, but they're not. You know, when people think of, I think public finance in general needs to do a better job of selling itself and perhaps coordinating with policy schools to really get these students to be able to see the fact that public finance means you are in the beating heart of government. I mean, you can't do much in government without paying for it. And that all comes down to managing the money. And so put like that, public finance could be pretty interesting. But I think for the most part, people think of it as, oh, it's public accounting. That's boring. I'm not going to do that. And so there is a big pipeline issue as well. And then on top of that, the AICPA has, you know, they're very, very well aware of the fact, this auditing issue in private and public accounting. And they have a whole plan for how to increase people in finance, but that's going to take time. That's not going to happen next year or the next few years. So again, I do see this becoming more of an issue, becoming worse rather than before it gets better. Last thing I'll say is that technology, people have spoken with, and I think this too, I think technology can help alleviate some of this burden. AI has come so far. I mean, we're using it at work. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how it can help me not do as much, not do as much of the boring work, so I can do some more deep thinking and all of that. People I talk with, everybody talks about AI and that being something that can help. How that will happen and how exactly it will help are, you know, we're still figuring that out.
I don't want to end on a down note with what we're talking about. You're in the DMV area, right? I'm happy to hear that the Wizards and the Capitals are staying in the area. That is good news.
Huge news. Let's have another podcast episode about that. Oh my goodness. When that news broke that they were going to leave, it was like people felt so betrayed, especially with the Wizards and Caps. They were in the heart of DC. There's such a huge story around that arena being built and it leading to the revitalization of Chinatown in DC. It was in a lot of ways about a lot more than just the sports teams, but the city managed to meet with Ted Leonsis and be able to change his mind. So, you know, much to the chagrin of Virginia, but keeping them in the city, it would have been devastating if they left.
I wanted to end on a little happier note. That stadium finance is something that we cover as well. Thanks, Liz and Canal, for an insightful discussion on government financial reporting. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, commenting, and subscribing via Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.